Welcome to the Hockey Writers Podcast, where your favorite THW writers discuss the hottest topics around the NHL and hockey world every weekday, Monday to Friday. Listen daily on iHeartRadio and wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to check out our other great content at thehockeywriters.com. I'm your host, Tom Pepper, and today I'm joined by Tom Castro and Patrick Brown. Thanks for listening and enjoy the episode. We are back now for week two of the Hockey Writers Podcast, so this is really exciting, and I'm just going to kind of be adjusting things as we go and, building this thing up. So we'll start off with our first two guests today. Tom, do you want to go first? How are you? And what have you been working on lately?
I'm good, Tom. Thanks for having me on. I've been working on a few things coming out of the break. I'm working actually on a story right now about the Rangers, as well as they're doing maybe a little bit of a wistful look to the West with how well their former teammate Pavel Buchnevich has been playing, particularly so since they do seem to have a little bit of a hole in the top six, and exploring a little bit long term as far as how hopefully that the young players that they do have, Lafreniere and Kako, very high picks, turn out to be better players than Buchnevich, because he has been so good this year. So that's something I've been looking into a little bit. Just sort of something that may not make the fan base that happy that we're looking at when they're playing so well, but it's hard to ignore how well he's played. So a little bit of a long-term assessment on their roster construction, sort of an evergreen post in that way.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things to talk about with the Rangers. We definitely talked quite a bit about them on the show last week. So it's exciting times for that organization. How are you, Patrick? And what have you been working on?
Hey, Tom, doing well. It's here in Arizona. I would say the stories are almost more interesting off the ice than they are on the ice right now. So you've got major arena drama. In fact, news kind of broke yesterday that it appears the team does not have the votes it needs in with the Tempe City Council to advance their latest arena proposal. So we'll see how that one plays out. And then obviously the Jacob Chychrun drama, that if you pay any attention to hockey whatsoever and you don't know about it, you've been living under a rock, because it seems like every team at some point in time has put their name in the proverbial Jacob Chychrun sweepstakes that may or may not even actually be a thing. So in addition to obviously just the rebuilding club on the ice, a lot of the headlines here in Arizona are off the ice and keeping me plenty busy. That's for sure.
Yeah, I've seen quite a few things come out of the Arizona Coyotes organization this season, and not all has been too good. So it is going to be really interesting to see what happens to that team going forward in the future. And of course, that the Gila River Arena, their deal with them ends at the end of this season. So
yep. It's
going to be interesting to see, you know, where this team goes, where they're going to end up playing next season. So, good stuff. I've read your stuff before, and you're a good read. So
we'll
jump into it. So, Tom, I'll bring you on first, and we'll talk about the New York Rangers, who are dealing with a little bit of COVID protocol issues right now. Some good and some bad news came out yesterday. Star forward Artemi Panarin is going to be returning. He's exited COVID-19 protocols, and he's missed the last four games, but he leads the entire Rangers team with 36 points. That's 10 goals, 26 assists in 31 games played this season. And he's expected to make his return actually tonight against the LA Kings. So this is pretty big news for the Rangers, who have been finding quite a lot of success this season. And now they're just getting a huge player back. And then, of course, the bad news is their head coach, Gerard Gallant, has now entered COVID protocols. So it's kind of one in, one out. But before we talk about Gallant, let's just talk about Panarin. How important is Panarin to the Rangers' offensive success?
Sure. Well, certainly long term, he absolutely is. Panarin is their most dynamic offensive player. He drives them so much offensively with his distribution, with his energy on every shift. The way that he challenges pucks and gains the zone, sets up and makes things happen. He's also obviously an integral part of what's become a very dangerous power play for them. So he is obviously a huge part of their team, and they, you know, getting him back is excellent news. That said, they did go 3-1 without him, and I think there were a couple of big benefits to him being out. You know, one of the biggest ones was obviously this team has tried to get this team, one of the offseason directives was to get this team to play more north-south, more simple, less flashy passing, get the puck in, so on and so forth. And when you lose a star player, naturally a team, I think any team is going to play, is going to try and simplify things a little bit. Well, the Rangers have been doing that all season, and I think they had to do it. You know, it's been a big part of their success, and they had to do it even more so with Panarin out. You saw that with these three wins. The defense was that they won those three games by a score of 12-2. They had a stinker against Vegas. They didn't play well. Their structure broke down. But you saw a lot of really good work, what they've been trying to accomplish without him. Chipping the puck out, getting the puck to the neutral zone, then getting it in, keeping the puck to the outside in the defensive zone. So they really played a very, very sound game and got the timely offense that they needed. You know, Panarin, for all his strengths, he is very much he's not a north-south player. That's part of his creativity. He plays an east-west game, gets into the zone, sets up on that left wing, looks to make a pass. That's not a negative, of course, but it did. I do think it helped the Rangers kind of solidify what they've been trying to do and have success with this style that they're still fully adopting this season. And the second part of it, too, is that it gave some opportunities, particularly Alexis Lafreniere, 2020 first overall pick. He's been on the third line, and he got the assignment for Panarin's left wing up there on that second line, played pretty well. And I think it was good for his confidence, really helped them just to give him a taste of that, where they think he's eventually going to have to end up somewhere in the top six. It's a little bit of a conundrum with the Rangers right now, finding that right spot for him because they're so loaded at left wing. And the other part of it was that it showed the team that there's additional depth. Getting Lafreniere up there, and the Rangers worked in a fourth line of Morgan Barron, who might have a future with the team, in the middle, Johnny Brzezinski, and Tim Gettinger, and they brought a lot of energy and a lot of kind of jam and grind, and that was a big part of how they've done the last couple of games with this team having players out, being able to bring some guys up. It gives them some confidence that there's some extra players, some guys who can come in and do the job. I think overall it's going to build their confidence that the Rangers could thrive without Panarin if they did play their system, did play as a team, which is what they did. And it's what Gallant's been preaching all season. Now, that said, long-term, you want him in your lineup, and the Rangers are very, very happy to have him back. The kind of offense that he brings, they are not going to be the same team without him long-term. So I think there was good news. I think this little short-term break helped. They're thrilled to have him back, but something very positive, or a couple of positive things, did come out of it for them.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, the Rangers are tied for third place in the NHL right now with the Carolina Hurricanes. So like you mentioned, they are having immense success even without Panarin in the lineup. So they're tied for first place in the Metro Division right now, and things are looking good for them in terms of making the postseason and having a competitive team. But right now, of course, we got to get over to the Gallant news, who's now entered COVID-19 protocols. So the Rangers are without their head coach. So he's going to be replaced by Chris Knobloch. Knobloch. I don't know if I'm getting his last name right. But
Knobloch, yeah.
Knobloch, there we go. So he's the head coach of the Hartford Wolfpack in the AHL, and he's going to be taken over behind the bench in the meantime while Gallant is recovering. So how confident are you with his ability to keep the Rangers on track?
Well, there's reason to be confident because this is a repeat of last season. David Quinn, that ex-coach David Quinn, entered the COVID protocol last season. I believe it was at the end of February, beginning of March. Knobloch was called upon to do just this. Came up from Hartford and coached six games, and the Rangers went 4-2 under him. And he claims, you know, he's a very understated coach, and he claims, hey, it wasn't me. I'm just putting forward. I was the conduit for David Quinn's ideas and his coaching. Now, we find out later this might not be a parallel situation because, as we discovered later on, the disenchantment with Quinn's coaching seemed to be growing at that point, or must have been growing at that point in the room, as he was dismissed. And this was a major point of contention with players. They felt he overmanaged and so on and so forth. So in that situation, Knobloch might have been a breath of fresh air for them. At the same time, you know, you'd like to believe you're going to be confident in that he is going to do the same kind of thing and sort of keep Gallant's systems and approach this in the same way. Knobloch has been a very successful coach in the AHL since the Rangers hired him 2+ seasons ago. That team has turned around. They're a competitive team. They were one of the worst teams in the AHL before then. So you'd certainly, Gallant has been a huge part of things for the Rangers this year, the way he's created accountability for them without being overbearing, giving the veterans some freedom, without, you know, with letting them know still there's still structure within, there's still structure and there's still accountability and a responsibility, and just getting them to play as a team. So it's not ideal. You don't want to lose him. He's been integral to their success, but you'd like to believe that if this is a short-term thing, as it was with Panarin, Knobloch in this case is going to be a very good replacement. He has experience doing this. The players know him. A lot of the people, the roster's changed, but a lot of the players know him and played under him last season during Quinn's time in the protocol. So not perfect, but if you're a Rangers fan, you'd like to feel confident that he's going to keep things the way that they are and that they've done this before, and they can get through it with Knobloch behind the bench once again.
And I mean, like you mentioned, Knobloch, I got the name right this time.
Yes, you did.
he did spend time with the Rangers last season, so this isn't his first time behind the Rangers bench. And like you mentioned, I mean, he has a good relationship with the players, and hopefully he can keep that success going for the Rangers because they're having a great season. Absolutely. All right, we can jump over to Patrick now and talk about the Arizona Coyotes and how the future core of this team seems to be potentially emerging this season. We'll start off with discussing Clayton Keller, who has 26 points, 12 goals, 14 assists in 33 games, leads the Coyotes in points. And he's a very interesting player to talk, because in 2019, he signed an 8-year extension with a $7.15 million AAV. So he is set to be an Arizona Coyote until the 2027-28 season. And he's honestly finding a lot of success this season. And I think he's one of the most underrated players in the league. Every time I watch him, he's got extremely incredible hands and playmaking skills. But I'll ask the expert, you, Patrick, what are the biggest upsides to Keller's playing style, and how high do you think his ceiling is?
Well, I'll tell you what's been impressive out of Keller this season is he's put the team on his back, and that was evident just in their honestly in their last game. And you see him when the team seems down and out, he's providing some sort of spark. He has really upped his two-way game this season. There was a play just a couple weeks ago where he chased someone down from the other end of the ice and was able to lift a stick on a breakaway. And with the Coyotes goaltending situation this season, nothing's a given. So you respect the effort. And something people don't realize is he was kind of being called into question even earlier this year, which, if I'm being honest, I don't think it's fair to call anybody out on this team this year because it's just not a very good team. But you know, his rookie year, he finished third in Calder voting, 65-point season, and he's kind of, I don't want to say regressed, I don't think that's fair, but his numbers have steadily declined over those years, and this season seems to be a bit of a reemergence. Obviously, the Coyotes do not have a captain. I think a lot of people heading into this season kind of assumed, including myself, that Jacob Chychrun may end up wearing that C, but with all the rumors that I was referring to earlier, obviously that's not a given. And Keller's certainly given himself a shot, already an alternate captain, clearly a leader on the team. You can see the kids on the team looking to him for direction. He's leading by example. And he's really got the entire teams and the entire new coaching staff, new head coach Andre Tourigny, just continues to gush about Keller. Almost every post game win or loss, he talks about how Keller has been leading by example, how the players are looking to him and following his lead. And he's the reason why a bad Coyotes team seemingly hangs around in most of the games this year. There've been a few blowouts as expected, but it just seems like he's there to make a play or score a goal or back check and help the team kind of stave off or weather a storm that's coming in from the opposition. It's been impressive. I think his ceiling is starting to go up again after a few years of regression. You're starting to see what he's capable of, and it's encouraging. It's definitely encouraging.
Yeah, I find him, again, I mentioned before, I find him an extremely exciting player to watch, and I think it's unfortunate that a lot of people haven't been watching the Coyotes, especially with how disappointing the season is, but Keller is definitely a player to keep an eye on and could have a bright future in the league. And of course, he's going to be signed until the end of the 2027-28 season. So assuming he doesn't end up getting traded out of Arizona, he's got a long future ahead with the Coyotes to continue building his career. All right, we'll get on to the next Arizona Coyote who's really emerged this season. Shane Gostisbehere on defense. He is second on the Coyotes with 23 points, 6 goals, 17 assists in 33 games. His contract is set to expire next season, so he's going to be looking for a next deal after next year. And he's really emerged as pretty much the Coyotes' best defenseman this season, and he's been extremely fun to watch. And, of course, he came over from the Philadelphia Flyers pretty much looking for, I guess, a fresh start in his NHL career. So I'll ask you, Patrick, how is Gostisbehere finding so much success this season, and do you see a future for him in Arizona?
Yeah, what a career renaissance he's having. It's hard to believe Ghost is only 28 years old. I feel like I've heard his name around the league forever. It's hard to believe he's only 28. But here's the other thing that's super interesting. The Philadelphia Flyers paid the Arizona Coyotes to take on Gostisbehere because it was a pure salary dump for them. They had moved on and obviously not happy with his production or decided to go in a different direction. And the Coyotes are frankly laughing all the way to the bank, literally and figuratively. Gostisbehere has been unbelievable for Arizona this season. And it's been fun to watch. Now, as for his future in the desert, there isn't one. I would be surprised personally if he's a Coyote by the end of the year. I have to think he will be one of the leading candidates to be moved at the deadline. You know, the Coyotes, number one, have plenty of flexibility to retain salary if they need to. And there's going to be some team shopping around light on the blue line looking for a good offensive minded defenseman that's going to come calling. And GM Bill Armstrong would be remiss if he didn't listen to offers and probably if he didn't pull the trigger on one, because you think Gostisbehere was a freebie to begin with. This team isn't going anywhere this year or next year. Next year is going to be just as bad, make no mistake. And I don't think Gostisbehere's stock is going to be any higher than it is right now. So I'll tell you, he's a lot of fun to be around. He's really nice, a very genuine person, and would love to see him in the Coyotes' plans. But I just feel like there's too much upside to a deal. You're going to see somebody, a team dealing with injuries or just wanting to make a final push for the playoffs, whether it be this year or even next year on an expiring contract. I don't see a long-term future in Arizona for Gostisbehere, but we're certainly enjoying the ride while we can, because he's given fans a lot to cheer for and he's given other, you know, the opponents a lot to think about night in and night out.
And I mean, if the Coyotes do decide to trade Gostisbehere, the Coyotes are loaded up for this upcoming draft. They've got three first round picks and another 5 second round picks to add on to that. So it's going to be a big offseason for the Coyotes here to build their future. So if the route is trading Gostisbehere, they can probably get a nice return for that and maybe even add to those plenty. They have an incredible amount of picks. I don't even know the last time I saw a team with this many picks this early. So
it's going to be interesting. Even if they don't win the lottery, there's the ability to trade up if they want right that badly. So Armstrong he swooped in and did some work in a hurry. Remember, they didn't have even a first round pick last year, and he was able to pop in and trade the Oliver Ekman-Larsson deal, I believe, is the one that brought the first rounder. They ended up drafting Dylan Gunther. So you're right. There's a lot to look forward to, but that is very, very far down the line, unfortunately, for Coyotes fans, and you're going to have to wait for these kids to develop. So good stuff.
Yeah. All right. We'll jump into the last segment of the show here. I'm trying out something new. We're going to do the Hockey Writers Podcast Articles of the Day. So it'll be me and whoever I have on the show, and we'll give a THW article that was published in the last 24 hours that we enjoyed reading and kind of, you know, highlight it and break it down a bit. And hopefully you'll go and read it, because these are handpicked by us. So I can go first. An article I really enjoyed reading published yesterday, Ben Wagner put out a piece called Penguins Brian Rust Has Become Team's MVP. And I found this a very interesting piece, especially considering how much we talked about the Penguins last week and just the incredible run they were on. I mean, they were on a 10-game win streak. They've now won 10 of their last 11 games. They've got the top wildcard spot in the Eastern Conference. And, you know, they've really resurged and, I mean, fixed a season that was looking pretty unpromising at the beginning. And they've had multiple players out of the lineup, including Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, who's still out. And they've needed players to step up. So Ben Wagner's piece discusses how Brian Rust has absolutely lit on fire as of late and is really making himself one of the Penguins' most valuable players right now. He has 20 points in 15 game plays, or in 15 games played. So he's on pace to set his career high in points if he continues like this. And to start the year 2022, 11 points in his first three games. This is just incredible for, I mean, when you look at the Penguins' depth and how many players are stepping up right now, it is incredible how they've just been able to turn their season around, considering all the adversity they've been facing and just players in and out of the lineup. And they're still competing and they look like one of the best teams in the league. And Brian Rust is a huge part of that. And now, I mean, another thing Ben Wagner discusses in this is the difficult decisions that GM Ron Hextall is going to have to make this offseason for the Penguins, who have 14 pending free agents. So that includes, I mean, just to name unrestricted free agents, you can go of Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang, Jeff Carter, Zach Aston-Reese, Evan Rodriguez, who's also going to be looking for a pay boost, and Brian Boyle, among others. So, I mean, as Ben Wagner says, if Brian Rust is part of the Penguins' long-term future, they're going to have to pay him and show him that he really is the star player that he's turning out to be for the Penguins, at least as of late. So I thought it was a great read. I thought it's really interesting. And you can read Ben's thoughts on this and what Brian Rust has been doing for the team. So again, that's Ben Wagner's Penguins Brian Rust Has Become Team's MVP. All right, I can hand it over to Tom now. What was your article of the day?
Tom, well, the one that I read with, that I really enjoyed, it's Signing Evander Kane is Worth a Shot for the Oilers by Rob Couch. I thought this was a very good read in that it's an example of the tack that he takes. Is it's a really good match between player and team. You've got this Oilers team that has two of the best players in the world but has major flaws within its roster and needs to be finding ways to compete with these players. They need help on the wing and they need depth scoring. And Kane, despite the huge mess that he's put himself in, might be a good signing for them. And for a number of reasons, the story does go into the fact that, you know, he'd be, the Sharks can terminate his contract as they're trying to do, he can be a cheap addition and the Oilers cap situation is not wonderful. So there's that. The part of it, though, that I like the best is the way he sort of portrayed Kane as what he is, which is a distressed asset. He's a very talented player, and that's being overlooked right now because of the mess that he's put himself into. But at the same time, he is a guy who probably realizes that even he realizes that he may be getting to his last chance, that his career is very much in jeopardy should this go through. This would be a chance to resurrect that playing with some of with McDavid and Draisaitl, an ideal situation. And one of the interesting comparisons to that end that Rob draws in this is to Tony D'Angelo on the Hurricanes from the Rangers, who ran, you know, he wore out his welcome and he's worn out his welcome a number of places. But since they picked him up and the Rangers bought him out and Carolina picked him up on the cheap, one-year deal, he has been a model citizen and he's been producing. I believe he's the third or fourth leading scorer at this point. So it's an example of how you find an undervalued or distressed asset and can make it work. And he makes Rob makes an excellent case here about how Kane would just be, could be a perfect fit and it could be a perfect situation for him, could really give the Oilers a boost, the kind of boost that they need. So I thought it was very thought-provoking read, very interesting, and lays out a really good case why it would work. And that story is Signing Evander Kane is Worth a Shot for the Oilers by Rob Couch. So I thought it was a very, very interesting read.
Yeah, good stuff. I mean, it is going to be very interesting to see what happens with Evander Kane, obviously, with him making headlines in a lot of terrible ways over the last year. So it's not looking good for his career. But I mean, you want to wish the best for everyone, and hopefully he can find that resurgence and he can have a story kind of like Tony D'Angelo, where he's able to turn things around and make positive changes in his life and come back and be an effective NHL player. So we'll see what happens with that. Maybe the Oilers or maybe another team. Yeah, only time will tell.
Right.
All right, Patrick, do you want to give the final article of the day?
Yeah, absolutely. So a little on the lighter side, I would say. I enjoyed Mike Fink. This was published a couple days ago, but six future outdoor game locations on the heels of the Winter Classic, the frigid Winter Classic in Minnesota. But what I think is interesting, I just saw something the other day. I believe it pulled in the most viewers for a regular season game ever or something to that effect. So still building on Winter Classic momentum all these years later, which is great. And what Mike looks at is where could a potential outdoor game go next? And he lays out Lambeau Field in Green Bay, which I think would be awesome. Personally, even though I'm a Lions fan and the Lions beat the Packers yesterday, so that was phenomenal. But anyways, I digress. Lambeau Field in Green Bay, Beaver Stadium, where Penn State plays, which holds over 100,000 people. So it would be similar to what we saw at the Big House in Ann Arbor a few years ago. You look at PNC Park in Pittsburgh, a baseball stadium, which we've seen. You look at Husky Stadium, Bristol Motor Speedway, et cetera, et cetera. But what I found most interesting and what honestly kind of got me excited was kind of a footnote in the article that talked about, if you guys recall, Major League Baseball Field of Dreams, they played in Iowa this past summer, and it was a lot of fun, and it was a little kitschy, but a lot of fun. And Mike floats the idea out there of, what about Abraham Lake, or what about Mirror Lake in Lake Placid, New York, having a true, you know, kind of like what they did in Lake Tahoe, except the ice conditions were a nightmare. but a true, almost going to one of those storied, you get the backyard pond type feel. And that's honestly, out of all of them, I thought that was a really cool idea. I feel like it's almost like getting back to your roots in hockey, growing up, playing on the pond, you know, love doing it. And it's the things that I think would really tap into that nostalgia and would get a lot of people interested and a lot of people energized. And in terms of players, who wouldn't want to go and play in one of those games? So, you know, there's a lot of considerations when you're talking about playing on a lake, a little more unpredictable to try to be able to control the ice. And, you know, would they even try that, or would it be a rink to the side or whatever it might be? So logistically speaking, obviously lots of challenges, but just the thought I thought was really cool and really kind of already got me energized and thinking about next year's and everything else. So that's kind of what pulled me in. Again, that was Mike Fink's article, six future possible places for future outdoor game for the NHL. And it was published on the 7th of January. So good read. You should check it out.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, I absolutely love outdoor hockey. Obviously that Winter Classic was quite a treat to watch it on TV. I don't know how much Wild fans enjoyed it in that freezing cold weather. I think it was I'm in Celsius. It was like minus 25 Celsius.
It's like minus 12 Fahrenheit. I think it was minus 12 Fahrenheit.
Yeah, it was cold. It was cold.
They were warming the ice. They were literally warming the ice, which is hilarious.
I'm out here in the Midwest, actually. And I cover the Rangers, but I'm in the Chicago area. And it was unbelievably cold here then. You didn't want to go outside. And I just thinking it was even further north and they were going to play outside was pretty amazing. So I can't imagine what those guys went through, but I suppose that's what they're used to. It was truly what they're going for with the Winter Classic. So it was an interesting game, and it was very, very watched because of it, I think.
I always love watching the goalies with the hats on. I think that's my favorite part.
I love that too.
All right, we'll wrap things up here. This has been a great episode, and I love this articles of the day edition here. We got some pretty interesting pieces to talk about, and hopefully everyone will go check that out. As well as you can find me, Tom Pepper, you can find Tom Castro and Patrick Brown on the Hockey Writers, and you can read our articles as well. We'll wrap things up here. Thanks again to Patrick and Tom for coming on the show. This has been a great episode. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hockey Writers Podcast. Listen to new episodes Monday to Friday on iHeartRadio and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to check out our other great content at thehockeywriters.com. From Tom, and Patrick, this has been the Hockey Writers Podcast.